Welcome back to Siren Radio with me, Jamie Rose. Today, joined with, and I still can't believe that I'm about to say this, American rock band, Wheatus. Brendan, the lead singer, they're performing in Lincoln on Halloween. They have a song about something to do with tickets and Iron Maiden, I think. So we'll get into that. But anyway, Brendan, how are you, mate? Thank you for doing this. I really do appreciate it. And I can't believe that I'm actually talking to a genuine rock star.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. How are you doing?
I'm. You know what? I'm absolutely wonderful. I've been excited for this for days to speak to you, and I'm really excited. Right. First of all, you guys currently touring in the UK currently. Milton Keynes, I believe you are. How are you finding that? Are you fan touring in the UK?
For so many years, we toured, had an unbroken streak of coming here at least once a year, and that was since 2001, right? And then, of course, pandemic happened, and it kind of threw everything off the rails in ways we couldn't expect. And it's been 4.5 years since we've been back, so we finally got back around to complete the circle, and it's as we remember it. It's quite lovely still. I think the crowds have gotten a little bit younger, and I guess they're more enthusiastic, I should say. Maybe that sounds about right. But other than that, everything's about how we remember it, and we remembered it fondly. So yeah, it was good.
Nice. When was the first time that you came to the UK to perform? If you've done it, well, from 2001. So what was your very first kind of gig in the UK? What would that be? I know we're going all the way. We're going way back here, aren't we?
Yeah. So it will be somewhere in Camden, I reckon.
Nice.
And it was in the spring, I believe, or perhaps even March of 2001. So it was quite a while ago. The better part of 22 or 23 years ago, yeah.
Nice, and you guys have been performing here ever since. As you probably mentioned, which one do you prefer? Do you prefer performing to your home crowds in America, or do you prefer performing to the UK crowds? Because it's always a bit of a, you know, you have some American artists that come over and they say that UK crowds are really great, and there's some of them that are like, they really like kind of performing and touring the US because it is so big. What do you probably prefer?
Well, that's such an interesting question because they're very different for us. In the United States, people had to find us on their own. We weren't on the pop television or radio stations or any of that stuff. So we have crowds there that are much more interested in the back catalog and rarities and different things that we've done, not so dirtbag centric, if you will. But over here, it was much more of a big sort of nostalgia hit, right? It was like up on the TV all the time and Saturday morning and BBC Radio 1 and Party in the Park and so on and so forth. And so when we come over here, we have a little bit of that groups of people who are interested in the back catalog and other things, but it's largely people who have this nostalgia moment with us from when they were young and saw us on television, which is quite different, a different group of people. So I would say that they're very different vibes. We feel a little bit more like big pop stars over here when we play, and a little bit more like seasoned road dogs over the United States. So we've lived both lives, both sorts of careers, and I think we're lucky for that because you get to see both sides of the coin, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. What is it like when you guys are on the road? Because I can imagine when you're doing the UK, it is a much easier drive to go from city to city than it is to do the US. Do you prefer being on the road in the UK because of the shorter distances, or do you kind of like being on the road and like essentially touring America with some of your best friends?
Right. Well, so the way that we're able to do it here is a little bit more intense because of the shorter drives. We're actually playing 6 days on, 1 day off for the whole entire tour, right? You couldn't really do that in the States. That's a bit too intense for America. You'll need 2 days off, I reckon, because the travel will just eat up all the time and you won't be able to make it. So, it's slightly different. It's more like going town to town here, and over there is more like going state to state or city to city. You know, the longer drives make for a very different, sleep and work schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it that you've kind of really found to like in the UK? Is there something that you've really embraced in the culture of being here that you just really kind of enjoy that is so different to America? Because some people say, you know, it's maybe going to a really traditional, you know, pub or like Camden, and how, like you say, about kind of everyone embracing Wheatus as a band. Is there something that you've kind of indulged in the UK? Sometimes it's, I think Chris Pratt said it was like Towie. Is there something that's maybe on TV or something that you're like, that's in the UK?
It's without a doubt the breakfast.
Is that what it is?
You can get a full English here or a full veggie English here in just about any town. It's going to be about the same. It's going to be a standard that you adhere to, that you're proud of. Mm. And it's so damn reliable that it just makes all the sense to try and get up. You know, our workday starts around 12 noon and goes until about 2 a.m. And so we take that first hour from 11 and try and find the all-day breakfast. It's almost always what we do. And we just did one today. My friend Josh Devine, the drummer from One Direction, he drove down to Milton Keynes with his family, his new baby, and we had a full English here in the parking lot of the Crawford Arms in Milton Keynes, and it was absolutely delightful. And that is one of the things that we look forward to the most about coming over here, is the breakfast.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know what? I have been to America, and I can't lie to you, I really do prefer going to Denny's. I think Denny's in America is real. Like, the fact that it's open, like, 24-7, it is absolutely amazing.
So, well, you're right on with us for that, because that's our stop on the road as well for breakfast. When we have a band breakfast, that's our stop.
It's 24-7. How different is it to be in somewhere like Milton Keynes? You guys are from New York, which I find baffling that you guys have come all the way from New York to come to Milton Keynes. It's absolutely amazing that you guys do all this. Are you just enjoying being on the road and just embracing it, really?
Oh, very much so. We love a little town. You know, if I'm away from New York too long, I start to get anemic, like kind of like E.T., you know? I have to say, we enjoy a small town. It's one of the reasons that we choose to do more dates, a higher number of shows in a more varied group of locations, because we want to see these places. On this tour, we've done Tarbert and Hull, and in the past, we've done Peterlee, Loughborough, Scunthorpe, Keithley, All of the off the beaten path locations.
You was born in New York. Why are you doing this Scunthorpe as a gig? It's baffling that you guys probably do it. And fair play to you, because there's not many American artists that will come and do all these really small towns. So I think it is quite remarkable that you guys really do it.
Well, the reason we do is because we like to play more shows, not fewer. Right? There's an attitude in some parts of the industry where you just go over and you do 7 or 9 shows at the bigger places, the bigger cities, and then you go home. I feel like that's a lot of trouble for a little bit of payoff. And I want to play more. I want to get better at what we do. I want to have that 30th show and know that we're just starting to get really greasy and now we're getting better at this game. And, you know, it's the work you put in that turns you into a better live band. The Beatles did that in Hamburg. AC/DC did it. All the bands that I look up to, they all spent enormous amounts of time on the road in their early days playing show after show after show after show, getting better, getting better, getting better. And that's what we like to do. We prefer that life.
Yeah, and you guys have still been about since 1995, and I like the idea that you guys are still wanting to perform and get better and better and better, and you've been going for 28 years now? Is it 28
Absolutely.
Years that you
yeah,
guys have been going?
About.
Yeah, so you're the only, Brendan, you're the only person, the remaining original member of the band left. How is it performing? Because you guys have still been performing with the band that you've got now that's doing this tour. You've still been performing since some of them from 2006, 2015, 2017,
yeah.
etc. How is it performing with the new ensemble as a band compared to what it was when you guys were first starting out? Is it any different, or is it kind of the same
voice? The first version of the band, we didn't really have the chance to develop into the kind of band that can do what this band does now. We didn't have the opportunity. We didn't have, the schedule was such that we couldn't stop and readdress things and break things down and improve them. We just had to keep going. Every little opportunity, we had to jump on it. We had to get out there on the road and do it, whether or not we were ready. But this band has been in the studio, out of the studio many, many times, and has come to a place where we're capable of more than the original band by orders of magnitude. And that was just, that's just time and space and being able to work on the music properly. When you're a young band and you have a big hit, you don't have time for any of that stuff. They just want to hear the hit song, maybe another one and a couple others, and then you can go home, you know. It's a, and a, it, whereas you get a much more deep musical exercise out of what we do now. And we have the crowd call the set list. We don't make a set list anymore. We have the crowd call it out during the show, so we do whatever they want. We learned about 63 songs for this tour, and that pool of songs is what the crowd knows to call from, just from conversations on the internet and whatnot. And they're calling them every night, and we haven't had any sets on this tour that have been written down prematurely. Not even a first song has been decided upon in the dressing room. We've gone raw as per what the crowd wants every single time.
How is it preparing for something like that then? Is it difficult to prepare, or are you just so seasoned at kind of having this kind of, it being called out? Or is it something, because usually you're going through it and you're going, okay, so you're going to do this and you're going to do this and I'm going to do this and it's going to be great and this is the song that's going to open it up and it's going to be really big and everyone's going to be jumping, everyone's going to love us and we're going to rock out a show. How is it performing, like, when you don't know what's going to open? Is it more difficult?
The way that it works is you work so hard on each song that you bring it to that point where it feels like a stomper, where it feels like you've really worked it in and you're really good at it and you can deliver it to whomever wants to hear that one for whatever reason they want to hear it. And there's also the like I said, you put in that amount of time, months and months of rehearsal, drilling the songs and just doing round robins in the rehearsal studio. Everyone picks three songs that they like and we go. And you know, basically, you get to the crowd after all that work, and you have to trust them. That's the next step, putting the trust in the people who have purchased the ticket, knowing that they will be the ones who decide that the show is a good one, because that's how they want it. They want it to be good. So it's basically a trust game. You know, we trust each other first in the rehearsal studio with an enormous amount of work. We all do our homework, and we all get it turned in on time. And then we go to the show and the crowd tells us what to do and we trust them with the agenda. So it's like that, trust and hard work.
Absolutely, absolutely. It sounds ace. We've currently gone 12 minutes into this interview and we've not mentioned the obvious elephant in the room. Teenage Dirtbag. Did you know it was going to be as big and as huge as one of the best rock songs, really? And in my opinion, but everyone knows it. Like, everyone kind of knows it. Well, I mean, we'll go on to why everyone knows it. And I have a slight problem. for example, my girlfriend, when I said, yeah, I'm interviewing Wheatus, and she went, oh, what the music? And she went, Teenage Dirtbag. And she went, oh, what, the One Direction covered song? I was like, no, Wheatus, no, Wheatus did it, and it was A. And everyone loved it, and they still do. So did you know that it was going to be as big as it was when you were writing it?
Certainly not. I knew that it was a good song. I knew that it was a strong narrative and that it had come together well, but I had been around long enough to know that that's not all it took, that there were many other stars that had to line up for it to get out there. And the truth is, there are plenty of songs that are wonderful, better than Teenage Dirtbag even, that nobody's heard, and they just don't get their moment. So it was, if anything, it struck the fear into me a little bit about the potential to screw that up, the next part, not the writing. The writing was done. The next part about who to show it to, how to perform it, how to protect it from bad ideas, bad producers, and so on and so forth. And so the next 4 or 5 years of after writing the song were about guiding it through the New York music industry and making sure it didn't fall into the wrong hands. And I think that we succeeded with that to the best of our ability at the time. Obviously, hits come and go, and so do bands, and we've experienced that part of the industry as well, which is one of the reasons that you said, you know, your girlfriend said it was a One Direction cover. We don't mind that. We're not precious about how people find it. We just care that they do. That's all, you know. We're happy to have other acts interpret the song and make it their own. And one of the things that we look upon as the most important reason that it continues on is the way people see themselves in it. If it's Phoebe Bridgers, or if it's Rustin Kelly, or if it's SZA, or if it's somebody playing an open mic in rural Arkansas, it doesn't matter. It's how people see themselves in the song, and that's what makes it continue. So however you come to it, we're fine with that. we're fine with that.
Yeah. So, but do you take an enormous amount of pride in the song, or is there certain songs that you maybe treasure a little bit more? Is it the fact that it's reached this unparalleled level of success that you kind of hold it in high regard, or is there certain things where you kind of like, I prefer this song from maybe the Valentine LP, for example?
I have my favorites when it comes to performing and feeling excited about things that are more challenging to us and are new and different and throw us a curveball and test our limits. But the truth is that Teenage Dirtbag is not an easy song to play. It requires a lot of attention, especially on the drums and bass. They have to fit this particular sort of slinky rhythmic concoction that if it's not there, you really notice. And for that reason, we do have to rehearse quite a bit. We have to keep it fresh, and we have to make sure that it sounds like people remember it, or else we'll be disrespecting the song. And the other thing that's true is a lot of bands, you know, they have one song that stands out in the catalog that everybody remembers, but not always is that a song that represents the band accurately. And we're lucky that way, because Teenage Dirtbag actually represents us pretty accurately. It's not a cover. It wasn't the A&R guy's idea. It was our song. It still is our song. So we're lucky to have something like that where we're not kind of having to fake it through one tune just to get onto the others. It's a fortunate situation. We're lucky.
Yeah. I'll tell you what probably isn't so fortunate. How easy is it each night to perform that high bit in Teenage Dirtbag? Is it an easy kind of vocal to hit, or is it something that you've got to kind of really dig deep to hit?
Well, I have to dig deep to keep it easy, if that makes sense. I do a lot of rehearsal, a lot of warm-up, a lot of vocal health, make sure that I don't drink alcohol, no cigarettes or anything like that. I don't smoke anything. And making sure that the instrument actually works is a lot of work to make it look like it's easy, to make it look like there's no work, you know? So I would say it like that. That's how it kind of has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'll just quickly go back. The One Direction cover, how does that come about? Because you guys have, you know, the song came out in 2000, I think, and then suddenly in 2013, I want to say 2012, 2013, One Direction come to you and say, we want to cover this. Do you have a conversation, or is it just something like, is there a permission that comes to it, or is it just a kind of a phone call that goes, we want to cover this, and you're like, but yeah, it's One Direction. Of course, they can cover our song. What was the conversation? What was the conversation like for that? And how do you find the song? Do you prefer the song to be a little bit different from how you sing it? Do you prefer it as a different cover?
If somebody's going to take it and make it their own, I'm always all ears for that. I love when somebody does something interesting with it. The boys in One Direction took it and turned it into sort of like a superhero cartoon, which I thought was really interesting and fun. And you know, I know that those guys feel the song in their hearts. It turns out they were all 9 or 10 years old when it came out, and it was one of the songs that they all claim sort of shaped their early musical identity, which means that it's basically to them what AC/DC is to me, right? The cycle repeats itself. And in some sense, I feel like, well, they don't need to ask permission, obviously, because they actually do feel it in their souls. But also there's something, if we're talking strictly legally, there's something called compulsory license. They don't need my permission to cover it, as long as they cover it the way that it is, right? That they don't change any lyrics and so on and so forth. And they held true to the original. So they got their compulsory license just by virtue of having done it correctly. And so this is a strange quirk of the music industry that this can happen. But I was very happy that they did it. Yeah. I was excited to see that they were introducing it to another audience. They took it around the world, and they renewed interest in the song in some places. That was a big favorite to us. And I struck up a musical relationship with Josh and Sandy, the bass player and the drummer in the band. And we've since made some recordings and done some interesting stuff. Josh plays on a few of the songs that we've released since. One in particular called Temporary Song. And then, of course, he's the drummer on Only You, which I released with Josh and Sandy. So they both play on those songs, on Temporary Song and Only You. And we have a whole bunch of others that we've been planning that are in the works. So it spurned a musical relationship, and I'm happy about that as well. So I'm happy to have their version out there doing its thing. I think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you say when the song came out and when there was 9 or 10, is there any other stories where kind of artists that are about nowadays have come up to you and have said, you know, met you at maybe, you know, a party or an event of some sort, and they've come up to you and gone, I love Teenage Dirtbag. You know, I love the song. It's great. I loved it as a kid. I still love it now. Like, who is there any big people that are kind of about nowadays that have come up and kind of said about it? And you're like, well, wow, I can't believe that you're giving me a compliment, for example.
Early on, people who have come to talk to us about it, Craig David, Robbie Williams, Mel B came into the dressing room one time to see us. That blew me away. Kylie Minogue did the same thing. We had some good love come in from just about everybody around the time that it first came out. And many, many since then, either in the form of a well done cover or just a nod in the press or something like that. The song gets love from other artists on a regular basis, and it's really kind of beautiful. But most recently, in the TikTok thing, I don't know if you saw that happening, that TikTok trend that happened with Dirtbag, where people were making videos of themselves when they were younger.
Yes, I have seen this. What? Slap on the wrist. I should have really mentioned that question.
No, that's fine. This ties into what you were saying anyway, because we had, Madonna and Lady Gaga, Lil Nas X and Cheech and Chong and Chevy Chase and all these celebrities doing the Dirtbag Challenge. And the one that really got me, the one that sat me down in the chair for about an hour just to think about it, was Quincy Jones. I could not believe that Quincy Jones knew who we were. I had to stop. I felt like the world stopped on that one. I just couldn't believe that one. I'm saying it. I hear it coming out of my mouth, and I know it's true, but it feels like I'm telling a story, you know? It's like, it just, you know, just the nod from him.
Yeah.
The greatest, arguably the greatest producer, one of the greatest musicians of all time. I just can't even get my head around it.
That it's reached that kind of level, and it's reached beyond an audience that I bet even you thought it was going to reach, for example.
Yo, way beyond. Just that he's hurt. Just that he's even heard it and he knows what it is. It's just, what? Like, you got to be kidding me.
I'll be honest with you. It's Kylie Minogue, for example, and you guys couldn't be any more chalk and cheese in the music industry if you tried. Right. And I kind of like the fact that she's come up and spoke to us and been like, I love the song. So, I mean, you've been about for, you know, 28 years now, and I'll leave this as the last question. After all this time, still performing in front of crowds, still performing, the longevity that you've had, how do you find it nowadays? Do you feel like you could keep going on for longer?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still feel like you are getting better?
We're trying to get better all the time, trying to get better, trying to be better at what we do, trying to be more sustainable, trying to be more entertaining. I'm almost 50. I turn 50 tomorrow, in fact, and I think that...
Where are you spending 50th birthday, by the way? What town or city are you in for your 50th birthday?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good, and I'm looking forward to it, actually. I don't mind being older. It's for me, it's been better than being younger, frankly. Mm. But I...
What town will you be in when you...
We'll be in Gloucester.
Wow.
Yeah. But I think that, I look at it and say, well, maybe I got 20, maybe 25 more years of doing this. I'm going to make every single moment of it count and make sure that it's, you know, we don't disrespect this opportunity that we've been given to do this for a living. It's so rare and so precious and so strange and preposterous, really, if you think about it on some level, to be an entertainer amongst what all people have to worry about. It just seems kind of frivolous sometimes, but I promise it isn't frivolous to us. We take it very, very seriously, and we want to make sure that we give people what they need.
Yeah.
If they're bold enough to buy a ticket. Certainly.
Yeah, you're not taking this for advantage. You're not taking this for, you know, for advantage whatsoever,
no.
are you?
So no,
you're
no.
treating it proper. Well, thank you for talking to me. I really do appreciate it. I still can't believe, you know, I'm pinching myself that I spoke to, you know, a member of Wheatus, the lead singer of Wheatus. I still can't kind of believe it, but thank you for coming on. Really do appreciate it. And,
no worries.
And best
Thanks
of luck. And please do get a ticket, by the way, everyone that's listening. The Drill, October 31st, Wheatus in Lincoln, which is still a nuts thing to think about when you think that Wheatus are in Lincoln. But yeah, please do go to Drill, 31st of October. Are you excited about the show, by the way, in Lincoln?
Oh, very much so.
Have you been to Lincoln before?
Yeah, we've played Lincoln before. I can't remember if it was once or twice, but we've definitely been at least once. You know, we like I said, we don't like playing only a handful of shows.
Yeah.
We like playing as many as we can. So throw in your Lincolns and your Scunthorpes and your Loughboroughs and your, give it all to us. We'll play every show.
Nice. Well, thank you for talking to me. Really do appreciate it. And yeah, best of luck in the future.
No worries, man. Take care.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.